it is possible as a human being to care deeply for something but still don't act on it. And understanding that paradox is what could be a make or break decision for brands if they want to nudge people into making better decisions or not. So it's the same things going on in the head of the people in brands as it is going on in the head of the people that we label consumers when they're consuming from the brand. And this is what creates this kind of paralysis and the paradoxes. It's so easily translated to why nothing is happening from the brand side, because it's a big fear of doing something wrong. Most of the brands wants to do good. Most of the consumers want to consume good. Let's just work with that.
This was Frederik Ekström from Above the Clouds, a creative platform that is at the intersection between consumer behavior and sustainability. I'm Fabian Nenzer. Welcome to New Horizons, our podcast where we discuss outdoor sustainability and what is relevant for now and the future. Let's start with a feeling we've all had. You are standing in a store holding a backpack, or scrolling late at night staring at a limited jacket drop. And suddenly, you ask yourself, do I actually want this? Or have I just been engineered to want this? Is it free will or is it a funnel? We often feel like data points with wallets, like targets on a spreadsheet. But then, every once in a while, a brand does something that feels different. It doesn't feel like a transaction anymore. It feels like a connection, like a movement, like something real. And usually, when that happens, it's not an accident, it's design. And today, we are trying to figure out how that magic is actually performed. Today's guest has spent more than 20 years exploring an important question of our time: how consumer behavior, sustainability, and brand strategy really connect. His research reveals many people want to consume responsibly, but feel they are already doing everything they can. So where is the challenge? Is it consumers who struggle to change, or brands that fail to communicate clearly and make better choices easier? I'm very excited to explore the power of responsible consumption with you. Welcome to the show, Frederik Ekström.
Thank you so much, Fabian. Really great being here with you today.
Frederik, let's dive into it straight away. In your publications, you talk about winning the consumer game. At first, that sounds almost adversarial, like if the consumer is an opponent that needs to be won over. But I don't think that's really how you understand it, right? So what does it actually mean to you?
I mean, yeah, it's a good question. Sometimes the wording gets a little bit marketing directed, but I mean, first I want to state that the intention is not to teach brands on how to manipulate or trick consumers into doing things that they don't want to do. It's more about finding out what is the behavioral science behind why the consumer chooses to do one thing and maybe state that they believe in doing another thing. Understanding that game that goes on in the head of the consumer, understanding on how you work with that, and helping to build up love and engagement around you as a brand and also your products and initiatives. But I can also say that, I mean, I started doing the next report research in 2020, and it started out with a feeling or an observation from the C-suites I met, like CFO, CEO, CMOs. They all talked about that, you know, sustainability is so important. We understand that, but our customer doesn't buy that. They don't really care. They say one thing, they do another. So I wanted to map this out and explain the barriers and the paradoxes behind this, what goes on in the head of the consumer, so they could understand that game a little bit better, to see that it's not that they don't care, it's that they do care, But there's other stuff that's happening in the head of the consumer when they come into buying stuff or behaving in different sets. And we have this kind of belief that when we research people, they say one thing, but they act differently. And then we interpret that the consumer is lying in the research without understanding why, or the conflicting paradoxes of that it is possible as a human being to care deeply for something, but still don't act on it. And understanding that paradox is what could be a make or break decision for brands if they want to nudge people into making better decisions or not. So, yeah, so I mean, I've been studying this in my own report since 2020 with the big annual reports, but working with it since 2005. Yeah.
And therefore using massive data, a lot of consumer insights you've taken from the Nordics, but also in Germany and throughout Europe, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, in my reports, I mainly target the Nordic region and Germany with my own data. And then I also compare it with other data that is like Europe-based, global-based, US-based, to see where do they kind of align in the same kind of perceptions, or where do they differ and why do they differ. So what I do is that, I mean, in the Nordics, it's a base of 2,500, and in Germany, it's a base of 1,300. And I do this always on general population. So it's not that I screen out outdoorsy people. It's to get like a broader picture of general population. And then we can see, are they more interested of going out in nature? Why are they not interested of that? Are they interested of making like more ethical or responsible decisions, or et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
This is a strong motivation for you to clarify the sentence from a C-level management to say, yeah, we're investing a lot in sustainability matters, but at the end of the day, the consumer is not spending money on it. We need to really discuss in this episode in detail.
A lot of times you come into this discussion that, yeah, we know it's important, but they don't buy it. So we maybe shouldn't focus so much on it. And what I usually break down is that, I mean, yeah, but it's not so interesting to look on old sales numbers to see last year they bought this product and they didn't buy that product that we labeled green in the store. It's more interesting to see, but what did you do around it? And how trustworthy is the initiative? And is the initiative relevant for the consumer? Does it bring meaningfulness to the consumer? Is it unique enough for the consumer to defend that kind of value proposition that comes into making them actually wanting to tap into that direction and consume the products? So with the reports, I kind of know a lot on where those trigger points are and how that kind of conflicting emotions paralyzes the consumer and where that happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the challenge lies more on the brand side than rather on the consumer side. Would you agree with that? Because, I mean, the data seems to be quite clear, right? That consumers, they are aware of, for instance, the urgency of climate change, biodiversity loss, etc., and they want to purchase responsibly. At least that's their attitude and the things they respond at first place, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we can see in all kinds of research. I have in my research, it's about 8 out of 10 that feel fear about what's happening with the planet. And then when I compare that with like global studies like Ipsos, Kantar, etc., and then with WWF, etc., we all end up in about 8 out of 10 that feel that we're heading towards climate disaster, or we're afraid of what's going on with the planet unless we change drastically on how we behave. So on one side, we can see that this kind of awareness and fear is strong within the consumer group. But then we can also say, on the other hand, that 7 out of 10 also feel that I'm doing all I can. So you have this paradox where I know we're gonna crash, I know we're gonna burn, but I don't know what to do because I'm doing all I can. So this, of course, creates an anxiety and conflicting emotion in the head of the consumer that everyone interprets it in different ways. Yeah.
Would you agree, and would your study also confirm that the consumer is aware of the power he or she has buying responsibly?
I would say that, unfortunately, they are not aware of their own power. It's almost 9 out of 10 that feel that my actions, what I do, disappear into a black hole. Doesn't do it, neither good or bad. Which means, I mean, if I explain those paradoxes in more numbers, we can see that on one side that I call status in sustainability, we have this like fear of what's going on with the planet. They lack knowledge on how to behave more sustainably or make better choices. They feel impressed by people that have that knowledge and attracted, physically attracted to people that seemingly live by it, which means that this creates a status in knowing and acting and doing. And they also identify themselves of wanting to be a person living within this bubble. But in the same time, they feel that my actions disappear into a black hole. I don't have the know-how on decode what the brands are telling me is good or bad. And I feel a fear of being judged if I make the wrong choices, judged negatively if making the wrong choices. And I'm already doing all I can. So the end of that is, why can't we just have fun? So these two conflicting areas goes on in the head of the consumer all the time, and they moving back and forth within this, that if they understand, they tap into the status and sustainability part. If they don't understand, they tap into this what I call reckoning with reality part and just escape or get paralyzed or trying to just blend in for a while. And this is where I believe, or what I can see, many brands do it a little bit wrong, because they believe that a consumer are either strongly committed to sustainability or not committed to sustainability. They don't understand that most people are humans operating in a messy middle, like floating back and forth, tapping in one day, doing an ethical choice, the next day buying from a fast fashion or a hedonistic food grocery store, etc. So by understanding this, how different consumer archetypes approach this differently, they can better align their initiatives and their messaging and their direction in what they do to be what I call more consumer-centric, and then create more value for the consumer in what they do.
Mm-hmm. So what would be your number one or first step advice for a brand to solve this feeling of discomfort of their consumers?
My number one advice would be that don't treat everyone as being a dedicated sustainability pioneer, but also don't treat them as they don't care, because they do care, but they care totally differently, which means that if you as a brand think that you should inform the consumer about all the great stuff you do, you risk of being treated as boring, and you need to understand the different archetypes and what kind of values are dominating within the archetypes, and then work differently over the consumer spectrum. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, please, you go ahead.
But no, I tap into the question I think you're going to ask, like how many archetypes I'm working with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is what I wanted to ask. How many archetypes have you identified? And is there also a group, but hopefully only a very small group, that is not at all interested in sustainability and responsible purchasing?
Yeah, definitely. It's I developed the archetypes actually way back when I was working at the larger branding agency to understand the consumer a little bit better. So we need to simplify the people base or user base or consumer base or whatever we call the people. And I decided to land down in 5 different boxes of consumer groups or archetypes that shows a little bit like how ready the consumer are to adapt a more sustainable lifestyle. And it goes from the non-believers, like sustainability zombies, and they don't believe that we have a climate crisis at all. It's a hoax. It's something that media took up or this woke generation is talking about. It doesn't exist. And those are about 1 out of 10. That's like as further out you can get on one spectrum. And then we have skeptical spectators that is a little bit more, a slightly larger group. And they kind of like observe this from a distance and they say, yeah, you know, it's happening, but I need it to be convenient for me to tap into it. I'm not gonna seek better options unless it kind of happens, unless it falls into my lap. But on the other side of the spectrum, we have 3 groups that all trigger positively on sustainability and climate initiatives. And those are the eco-floaters that kind of float in between. And then we have the proof seekers, and then we have the dedicated pioneers. And these 3 groups, they all trigger positively and they map out around 8 out of 10 in the entire consumer spectrum. However, it's only 1 out of 10 that is defined as being truly dedicated pioneer to live and act on their belief and have the knowledge on knowing how to do it, etc. The 2 other larger groups, they kind of like floating around or seeking proof on seeing how could I tap into this and why is this important to me, etc. So, I mean, that's 7 out of 10 that kind of floats out there, but they want to tap into it. They identify them as being a part of this, but they don't know really where to start, how to interpret communication, how to decode what's good and what's bad. And one group is triggering strong on storytelling. One group is triggering strong on getting proof and results and seeing the metrics behind it to engage. And then the small part, the dedicated, they are triggering on values and purpose and the greater good in it, etc. So this is also a part where many brands kind of navigating a little bit too strict. They think that if we're launching this great product where we've done all these great initiatives, it needs to be super purpose-driven. It's going to tap into the dedicated pioneer because that is a sustainable consumer. Mm-hmm. But then they miss out on 7 out of 10 that would also tap in on this and be engaging with this if it would be more storytelling-driven or showing the results behind it, etc. So that's how the archetypes truly help brands to understand where they kind of like operating in the head of the consumers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very interesting.
Long explanation. Yeah.
Yeah, but very, very, very interesting and very helpful as well to understand the different archetypes. And I believe that probably a person can also in one situation maybe be very more towards a dedicated pioneer and the other moment more floating towards being a proof seeker, yeah. But probably not to ending as a sustainability zombie. That's probably a group that is a very closed group. But yeah, but definitely showing a vast interest in sustainability topics, but attracted by, as you explained, by different aspects of it, be it value-driven or more the storytelling part and different instruments, as you explained.
And I also believe that many brands kind of do a small slippery kind of mistake in their strategic decisions is that when you create a product that you want to launch that is like it's improved, it has a higher responsibility ethos around it and tell the world about all the great achievements and the stuff that you have done with it, then many brands still believe that we need to be as responsible and informative in our communication as we have been in the innovation. So they come out and tell that we did this step and now this is textile to textile and now, or this is recycled versus virgin and this is, but in the head of the consumer, they don't really care about that. They want to say like, okay, so is this going to bring me joy? Is this going to bring me some value? Will my my friends around me look at me more good or more bad if I wear this one? Can I curate the story when I'm going to a dinner party? Can someone, do they understand? And this is where these kind of like easy, understandable types of concepts also come in, like why secondhand is growing so much now, because it's so easy for everyone to tap into. If you say that I bought a new jacket or I bought a secondhand jacket, everyone will understand, oh, you bought a secondhand. That is probably slightly better than buying a new one. So it needs to be brought down to what the consumer understands and then nudge them into making slightly better decisions step by step. And that's also something where I can see the navigation of initiative and communication kind of missing out, where the consumer actually are, how much they understand and what they care about for the moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So advocating here for really turning to easy and understandable concepts for the consumer. And
yeah, definitely. So it's important to understand that a brand, corporation, product, etc., need to transform, need to do all the good stuff. But then when it comes out to communicating to the consumer, it needs to create that extra value. And that means first they need to understand it. Then it needs to be fun. Then it needs to prove that the people around you will look at you better, and you need to like form and fit and design and price, et cetera, roll out.
It's a great explanation and really good to understand it that way. Frederick, is it then also, would you say, a reason why secondhand is experiencing such a boom and not really a short trend, but really now for many years and probably for the years to come as well? I mean, we see growing numbers with secondhand and also other circular services like care and repair and also product rental, for instance. Would you say that this is a main reason for the going in this direction?
I would say yes, it is. It is a big reason why so many are experiencing and engaging with secondhand at the moment. But it's also, I mean, we have tough economic times for many consumers. So one part is to like, I can earn some extra money. And I can see that in the report as well, is that, I mean, the main priority is to like earn some money, find some cheaper stuff, make room in my wardrobe for new consumption. And then it's the sustainable thing to do. But the main like driver that is communicated in the peer group is that if I'm buying something secondhand, it's so easy to understand. So everyone around me will look at me as in a slightly better way. So tapping into my identity of wanting to be this a little bit more informed person, this is a way of signaling that I'm moving in that direction. So that taps into to the secondhand boom. And then what secondhand also is doing is that triggering all the other stuff that goes on with care and repair, for instance. Because if I'm buying an outdoor jacket for a waste amount of money, and I know that if I'm taking care of this jacket, I can later sell it as a secondhand value of an estimated price of X amount of euro. So then I will be triggered to care about it and repair it if something happens and make it look good and feel good so I later on can sell it to buy something again. So that also triggers a cycle of being more aware of the value of the products, which also triggers some brands to understand that we can make our products a little bit more durable, because then we can also communicate secondhand value, and that would trigger this kind of circular process within it. So the small steps is triggering other small steps that slowly creating a greater awareness of a product life cycle, which is good. But of course, not so many consumers are aware of all the stuff that's happening with it. But we as, I mean, consumer behaviorists, we see the different trigger points happening and why they do it and how that like triggers other stuff, both within the consumer group and within the brand actions they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. So many different trigger points and sustainability and the easy messaging connected to secondhand and the benefit of it, of course, positively influencing this behavior.
Yeah, definitely. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Fredrik, once again, we discussed the archetypes.
Yeah.
Looking at these archetypes, would you agree that then good sustainability communication starts with a good research on the consumer group of the brand, and to see with regards to sustainability, to see what archetypes do we have in our consumer group, and then start from there developing the best communication strategy?
If you want to earn value, you need to create value. Otherwise, you're not bringing anything to the market that brings value to the market, and then you shouldn't get any value back from the market. So that's like the number one to start with. Like, what value do I bring to the market? And when you're trying to figure out what value you bring to the market, you need to understand what creates value in the mind of the consumer. So then you need to understand, who is my customer today and who is my potential future consumer? How do they map out with the different archetypes, and what values are dominating within the different archetypes? And if we understand what values that are triggering within the archetypes, then we can evaluate ourselves to see, do I bring any value to this consumer archetype? Otherwise, I'm not going to get any value back. So you need to understand your consumer and customer, and then what brings value to them, and then evaluate, what value do I bring to them? Does this match or not? And then map out, how do I communicate that in a way to increase engagement, likability, meaningfulness, uniqueness within the consumer group? So I also strongly disadvise brands that, I mean, you can't just take a product and then trying to manipulate the consumer group into believing that the product is valuable. You need to start with the consumer and understand what brings value within this consumer group, and then see, the product I thought I'm going to launch, is this creating value for them or not? So for me, it's all about being consumer-centric rather than engineering-centric. It's you need to understand what creates that value. And that when you're entering a store and you look on, like, why don't the consumer buy specific products with green labels or ethical messaging or sustainability messaging, etc., etc.? A lot of brands haven't evaluated, like, why don't they choose this product? They just evaluate, they didn't choose it. They chose another one. So they don't care about the planet because we put this green hang tag on it. So they, if they don't care about our green hang tag, they don't care about the planet. But what they're missing is that the consumer entering a store and they evaluating all different products depending on activities, experiences, problem solving, price points, fit, form, design, etc. As a brand, to be communicating, building up this value proposition before entering the store. So they understand that when they come in and see a signal on a product, they know there's so much work behind that product. That's what that hang tag says. It's what it tells me. And then all of a sudden, the meaningfulness and uniqueness of that product goes up. And then the price point goes up and the likability goes up. But if brands haven't done their homework and pre-work, then that meaningfulness, it's then you're competing on price points. That kind of value game is where many still kind of struggle. And they still believe that putting that green hang tag and informing the consumer of what we've done in that buying process, that will make them to tip over. And if they don't tip over, they don't care. So then it comes back to this sustainability paradox. Yeah, no, they do care, but they don't know how to evaluate if it's good or not. So why don't we just have fun? I buy the product for a cheaper price that looks good, and then I move on. And maybe next time I buy a second hand. And then the brands that do all the transformation have lost the trust and they have lost the engagement with that consumer because they just don't believe it.
And then the disaster is perfect. No one wins.
Yeah. No one wins. The cycle just goes on. And that's what I'm wanting to highlight within all these reports, that's not what's going on. The paradox is that they do care. It's just that communication, branding, meaningfulness, stuff around it, and the value build up around initiatives, it's just not attractive enough for the consumer. And there is ways to do it that works, but it needs to be built in the operating system of mapping it.
So just looking at numbers and green hang tags, and from there concluding, we invested a lot, or it feels at least we invested a lot, and now the consumer should buy this product, but they don't actually do so. We're not following this the next season. This is a conclusion that is misleading. So really taking here a human-centric approach, as I understand, looking behind the curtains and what are really the human needs as well that are addressed from a brand or a product that should fulfill a certain need.
Yeah, definitely. 8 out of 10 feel fear about what's going on with the planet, that they lack knowledge and want more knowledge, that they're impressed by the knowledge and they feel attracted to people that have that knowledge and seemingly live by it. So as soon as someone comes up with a similar type of product, but mapping into all of those aspirations to the same kind of price point, same kind of design, the consumer will start migrate over to that kind of products and brand instead, because that brand will make the consumer feel good about themselves. And if brands still then operate in this kind of like price and design kind of feature direction, they will lack trust in taking that leap into doing all the good stuff and the transformation. And they will have a long way to go to build up that trust again within the consumer group. So looking at sales numbers is good. It gives a perspective of what's going on in certain aspects. But looking into aspirations and where the consumer is moving is what's going to drive your business for the next 3 to 5 to 10 to 15 years. So it all depends on, do you want to live here and now, or do you want to have a prosperous business in 5 to 10 years moving forward? So I think that kind of explains it in a harsh way. But it's still, I mean, doesn't matter how many like climate or impact summits you go to and you talk to and you explain this and you present this, the question or the comment still always comes after that. Yeah, but you know, the customer doesn't care. Our customer doesn't care. This is good for others, but for us, we can see that they don't buy this. And then they haven't evaluated why. They just see that this is happening. They don't map out the behavioral science behind it, that, but who do we want to be?
Yeah. So it's about, it's the task of the brand to bring down these structural hurdles, because the, I mean, the science and the research results you provide, they are so clear. So instead of saying, yeah, but our customers, that they don't care, it's rather about, why are we not able to make our customers decide for the better choices we offer? So what are we lacking in our strategy and communication? Because customers, they actually, based on your findings, they want this. They're interested in it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, for me, the science is super clear. But then we come down to the difference of the holistic brand building part that, that goes on and the buying process. If you take a ski brand, for instance, and this is a fictive brand, this is not a brand I'm referencing to. But if you take a brand that, a ski brand that work year round or throughout the skiing season, only showing aspirational images of athletes doing crazy free riding, doing weird stuff and being out there doing that, and then and nothing connected to a sustainable or transformation or climate initiatives to do. And then they put a product in the store, raise the price 20% and have a hang tag on it saying like, recycle this or this blah, blah initiative. And they expect someone to understand it. It's you, so they need to bring in the same kind of aspirational type of communication are around the initiatives they do to build up these feelings and the emotions and the trust in the transformation. So when the consumer then enter the store and comes in to become like a customer that is in market, then they understand. So that kind of misalignment of building aspirational brands around like style or experiences and not about what they're actually doing in transformational parts, that risk of not driving the consumer into making those choices better, even if they want to do it. I think that's also what makes it a little bit hard for many brands to operate in this spectrum. Because if we look at the research and we also keep in mind that within brands, it is people. We also know that the same people that we research, that we label consumers, they also work within the brands. So it's the same experience within the brands that we're heading towards climate disaster. I don't have the knowledge. I want to be this kind of person. So I want the brand to be this kind of brand. I'm impressed of people that have the knowledge. So I want to impress and show that we have the knowledge. I'm attracted to others that have it. So I want to be attracted with the brand I'm running. But I don't know how to do it. So it's maybe it's easier not to take the step, because if I do something wrong, I might be judged negatively. And I don't have the know-how of decoding what's right and what's wrong. So maybe I just freeze for a moment, let someone else take the lead, follow that for a while, and then I maybe tap into the next season. So it's the same things going on in the head of the people in brands as it is going on in the head of the people that we label consumers when they're consuming from the brand. And this is what creates this kind of paralysis and the paradoxes. So it's so easily translated to why nothing is happening from the brand side, because it's a big fear of doing something wrong. But then they know that they should do it. They don't really know exactly how. And then they believe that, okay, we made this, we put a hang tag on it. No, they didn't buy it. Maybe this was wrong then. Maybe we don't do this next year. And they all kind of trying to figure out. And it would be so easy if everyone just understood that most of the brands wants to do good. Most of the consumers want to consume good. Let's just work with that. And then it would actually be an easy, understandable kind of trust between the brand and the consumer. And being that transparent brand saying, hey, you know, we don't know everything. We're trying. We're doing our best. We built this business ages ago before we had a climate crisis. Now we're trying to adjust. Now we're trying to take step by step. Could you help us out? What do you feel is the pressure point at the moment? This is what we feel is the pressure point. And then working with that back and forth. I believe that kind of that kind of exchange between brand and consumer, it doesn't really exist. But if it would exist, everyone would love it, because the people within brands would feel, whew, we have people with us on the other side. They like this. And the consumer would feel, whew, we have someone over there trying their best. They're not good. They're not perfect, but they're doing something. And that I can't tap into. I understand that because I'm also trying. I'm also doing something and I'm not perfect. I'm floating back and forth, or I'm seeking results, or I'm seeking values, etc. So that kind of exchange and understanding would also help brand to get a deeper sense of, like, but how do we operate? Like not putting themselves on this high pedestal, like, we're going to save the planet. You're not. I mean, no brand will save the planet. But you can do parts of it. And you can do your best. But you still need to be fun. And you need to be affordable. And you need to help me experience stuff. And you need to help me look good. And if you can solve this, I'm happy to work with you. And that kind of working back and forth, that's my opinion of being consumer-centric, like working with that. And that could help so many brands to understand how to operate slightly better. Yeah.
And this sounds that, like, your experience is that a lot of brands are missing out on this opportunity, on this very honest, transparent dialogue with a customer base.
My experience is that most brands miss out on this possibility, that they're still trying to believe that we know what we sold last year, so we need to protect that sales number. We know that we can tap into this market to sell a little bit more, so then we get a bit of a bonus. But then we also know that we probably should do something a little bit better. How do we solve that puzzle? And then they try to innovate something and push it out, rather than having that dialogue back and forth and evolving together and finding that values, like, how do we create value in your world? And how do you help us create value in our world? And how can these two worlds create a greater set of values to the planet as well? And how do we build up that operating system? And that means that you need to listen to the consumer. You need to understand the consumer. You need to work with them in an incorporated way when making your decisions. Yeah.
What I hear from that is as well that do you experience that there's a lot of anxiety within management as well to tap into the complexity of sustainability, just looking and trying to save the turnover they've done the previous year and not risking anything? So we're trying to put on a green hang tag on something. Hopefully it will work. And if not, we go back to business as normal. Is that something you experience?
Definitely. There's as much anxiety within the brands as it is within the consumer spectrum or user spectrum, people spectrum. And that, I mean, it comes from many reasons that we all know that it is so much easier to not change. It's so much easier to stick to what we have done and try to defend that and try to make that a little bit better and then hope on a different outcome. That is, of course, then better than last year. That is the easiest way of running a business. Like working business as usual, how did we do it last year? How can we make it slightly more efficient, slightly more profitable, slightly tap into slightly more consumers and then grow this slightly better? And then you have a notion on that the people and society around you expect that you should do something good. So then you take like maybe 10% of your SKUs and you make them greenish. And then you label them green to say that we tick that box, we have something, we have this conscious kind of collection, we're moving into that, we're getting into the green corner a little bit. And they don't need to defend so much sales on that, but they need to then defend sales more on the other. That's like just running the business as it goes. But that anxiety is, I can see, is growing with many people working within the brands because they also don't know how to transform. Like, how do you transform a traditional business that is linear with multiple types of ingredients within a product or materials and fabric mixes, etc.? How do you create that in a better way and still get the same kind of customer satisfaction and consumer engagement? It's hard. And in the same time, you will also have unethical brands that don't transform and instead put all their money into marketing. They will take a piece of that market share because you are busy doing your transformation parts. So what I usually then advise brands is that if you do the transformation consumer-centric, you look on what is relevant for the consumer, what triggers the consumer, what do the consumer want you to tap into, then you can keep the consumer momentum and drive excitement with the consumer to earn money on your transformation while doing all the transformative parts in your brand. And that like drives down the anxiety a little bit. Do like transform bit by bit, not all at once. Involve the consumer, listen to the consumer, get the feedback from the consumer in limited drops, and then transform it in your never out of stock programs with the same kind of messaging, same kind of directions. And then it makes it easier, calmer, and everyone comes like, this wasn't so hard. And all of a sudden you transformed 80% of the entire brands and products. So it's many different ways of doing it, but the anxiety is there and you can calm it by including the consumer in making your decisions.
Yeah, and I think also explaining what might be shortcomings, what might be still challenges, and making these transparent as well. I mean, this is about good intentions. This is about really making a difference, even though knowing that sometimes there is not the 100% perfect solution already out there, but still not waiting and then floating to escapism or in a paralysis and doing nothing, but really trying to transform. And these are sometimes small steps.
Definitely. I would say most of the time, small steps. And I also have one of my sayings to many brands is that, I mean, you need to accept that you will probably never be perfect. That's, I mean, because you produce products, you work with this, things happen, the world is changing, And what you believe today is a proper solution might tomorrow not be a proper solution. We've all seen this, that we believe that bringing in this fabric, this material, this ingredient, that will help solve this problem. Whew, we solved it. And then a few times later, it will be, no, that ingredient, fabric, et cetera, it's not good. You need to change. So it's about understanding and accepting that you probably never will be perfect. So it's about doing stuff and continuously doing stuff. Slightly better, slightly small improvements here and there with a mission of transforming into a better corporation. And that also helps to make these kind of nudging stuff that could be fun. And it's important to make it fun, as fun within the organization as it is for the consumer, because otherwise it's hard and it's seen as a cost. But if it's fun and if it drives consumer excitement, it's an investment in brand. So it's two different perspectives on how to approach it. So small steps. Don't believe that you're going to be perfect, or accept that you're not going to be perfect, probably. And then just continue doing step by step.
Yeah. And sustainability definitely is a journey. So there's no end to it.
Yeah.
Things that are good today, they might be outdated tomorrow. And then hopefully that we see a continuous trend towards even more ambitious goals and sustainability levels, right? Mm. There's no end to it.
There's no end. Yeah, there's no end game. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's something everyone needs to understand. This is just a continuous cycle of improvement. That's all you can do. And if you try to transform the entire operation at once, it's going to be tough. But if you do small steps at a time, it could be fun. And that's as important within the brand. And then be transparent and authentic in what you do. That means that you will be building up consumer trust, retailer trust, and all of that trust metrics that you need to build up to be successful as a brand. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Fredrik, thank you so much. We talked a lot about what brands can do better. One aspect we talked about in the beginning of our conversation was the power of the consumer. And what you said in the beginning, they are not really aware of their purchasing power and how their purchasing can influence sustainable development. So, I mean, there is the SDG number 7, responsible production and consumption. Maybe we can address that at the end of our episode. What would you think could elevate this aspect a bit more, that consumers see their power of influence when it comes to responsible purchasing?
Mm. It's a hard one. I mean, as I mentioned in the beginning, almost 9 out of 10 feel that their own actions disappear into a black hole. That doesn't do good, doesn't do bad. They just don't see what kind of difference it makes. And then also we have this aspect that most of the consumer or people believe that the people around them doesn't really care. They're not doing, so why should I do? But then they have the paradox of that they also see that the people around them, they probably know more about the topic than they know. So they feel that if I'm doing the wrong choices, they will look at me negatively. So it's easier for me doing nothing at all, because change is noticed, not changing could just pass by without anyone notice what I'm actually doing. And that creates this kind of paralysis paradox that you want to do good, but you can't see where your actions is heading, and you're afraid of being judged, and also you believe that no one else is doing it. So I think that a lot of the responsibility brands have today is to communicate more about it, but communicate more about it in a fun and aspirational way, so the consumer understands it bit by bit, tap into it because it's fun, or get into initiative because it helps them kind of like, oof, I believe in this cause. This is something that is relevant for me. It's authentic for me. I want to tap into that. And then they learn a little bit more and then they get into this kind of cycle. But it is a hard part. We can see in most research that the consumer they don't feel that they have the power. They feel that they are being overwhelmed by a lot of offers, overwhelmed by a lot of communication. And this is also where another paradox comes in, because some brands actually try to do good, but they don't communicate good. So the consumer feel, I don't really trust this. Is this really something that is good? And then they get too much information, too much communication around it. So they get a bit of fatigue around, like, you know, I can't decode all of this messaging. So maybe that's not good either. Yeah. I don't know who to trust. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's a big trust issue to come up with, or to come over for a brand, and then to be able to solve the puzzle of feeling that my actions actually matter. And I mean, it could be done in many different ways. Either it could be that you tap into conservation project and you tie a product to that and you communicate exactly why this is relevant for this product and all the stuff that you have done around the product to make it relevant for this initiative that you do. That's one part. And we can see in the numbers also that 9 out of 10 consumers want brands to tap into causes that they believe in. And the number one cause is protecting biodiversity. So if you can lean into that as a brand, talk about that, protect that, work with that, and make sure that your product is solving some parts of that, then they would understand that. The other part could be maybe as... We had a Swedish brand called Asket in Sweden. They had a carbon footprint receipt. So every time you bought a product from them, you had the price and tax and everything that you pay for it. But then also beneath that, you had the impact, the carbon impact this product made on the earth for consuming, making sure that now you understand this, don't buy another one unless you really need it, because this is the impact for every product you buy. So then they could see that, okay, this is what impact I created by doing this. Maybe I should sell this on secondhand later. Maybe I could take care of it. Maybe. So it's different ways of working with it.
Okay, and because we always emphasize in this podcast how important it is to empower others and inspire positive action, just a quick note from our side. I'd really like to recommend the episode with Dan Yates, where we discuss the business case for biodiversity. You can find it on our website and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you don't want to miss future episodes, feel free to subscribe to New Horizons and share it with others, because we are all in the same boat and there's so much we can learn from each other. Is this an example for an easy to understand messaging? Or might that even already be too complex and lead into escapism because this feeling of discomfort? I just bought something and now I see directly the impact of it, and now this feels like a moral burden I've taken here.
I would say it depends on how you execute it as a company. So the carbon footprint kind of receipt, that will drive anxiety. It will drive a little like, oh shit, this is the impact. So, but if the brand then work with like, so this is our integrated secondhand marketplace, and this is how you resell your product and take care of it afterwards. This is our care and repair program that we offer free of charge or for a small amount to make sure that this product lasts long. And also follow up with targeted send outs to them saying like, You had your product for 1 year. Now we know that many people maybe would like to fix this. Make sure your product lasts 3 years longer by doing this. Then your life cycle footprint goes down. So it depends on how they work. And I think we can learn a bit from the car industry, the auto industry, like how they work with, like, you buy a car, you go for service after X amount of miles, and then you go for service after X amount of miles, then you have an estimated resale value on your car. Mm-hmm. If you don't do the two services, then your estimated resale value go down. So that triggers people to take care of the car, polish the car, clean the car, service the car to make sure that they can get that out from it. And by working with these kind of logics, you can also help people understand that you bought this, this is the footprint, but if you care for it after this amount of time, if you repair it after this amount of usage, it will last for this amount of years, and that could give you an estimated secondhand value for this amount of money after X amount of years. Then the consumer can say, "Whoo, this is the footprint, this is the solution. This is how I can work with it." Mm-hmm. So it depends on, you can't just bring out the anxiety, but if you also bring out, like, poof, this is the impact, but this is the solution. This is how you can work with it. And then that will solve that kind of puzzle. And then they will start asking, why don't I have this on my jacket? Why don't I have this on my shirt? Why don't I have this? So then you bring up a new norm for it. So
it's much more than just providing some greenhouse gas numbers, but you need to invest and you need to provide solutions, and it needs to be holistic. And would you agree, Frederick, that it's also needs from the owner and the management a strong commitment and a long-term orientation as well in order to do so?
Yes, definitely. It's a commitment from the brands, but it's also driven by what creates value in the mind of the consumer. So, I mean, we all know that we have too much stuff in our wardrobes. Still, we buy even more. So by offering these kind of services where you get, like, you buy this from us, this is the circle how this is going to be executed after this to get, like, a second life, be pre-loved for someone else, but you need to care for it, you need to repair it, you need to, like, and then offering these kind of solutions. That takes away an anxiety or a stress within the consumer that the brands can operate within. So yes, it is a commitment, but it is commitments that creates value. So that means that you're creating a loyalty and an engagement with that consumer, that in their mind, they having a relationship with this brand as long as they have this product, because it's built up in a different way than just buying and throwing away. So yes, it's long-term commitments, but it's also loyalty and trust and engagement driven within the consumers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And driven by a strong desire for staying in business for many years to come as well. It almost feels like an investment into the future.
Yeah.
Of a brand.
Yeah, definitely.
And trust in your own brand and your services.
Yeah.
And the good things you do. And if you do that, this almost appears that this is a straightforward way of approaching it.
Yeah, definitely. And I can go so far to say that any brand that states that they have good quality or durable products, but they don't have a care and repair and resale structure of that product in place, doesn't trust their own product. So why should anyone buy that product? So if you trust in your product, now we have made the best product we can make. It's durable, it's with good quality, we communicate durability and good quality, then it should be a no-brainer to commit to a care system for the durable product and good quality product, a repair system for the durable and the good quality product. And since it is durable and such a good quality, a resale system that is integrated within the brand's ecosystem for it. So the consumer knows that I'm investing in this piece, I care for it, I repair it, and I can resell it. Then it's an investment and a long-term commitment from both ends. So any brands stating that it's durable, it's high quality, but we don't have a care system, we don't have repair system, we don't trust in resale integration, then you don't trust that your product is durable and in good quality. So that's an evaluation that many consumers can have today. If someone doesn't trust that their product is good enough for a second life, then why should it be good enough for a consumer to keep that product for many years to come?
So having or offering circular services like care and repair, secondhand, product rental almost feels like a must-have for basically every brand.
It will be a hygiene factor, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Short answer on that. Yes.
Yeah. Are there other initiatives you could think of that are absolutely must-haves for brands for the future?
I mean, a must-have or a must way of working for brands that will happen during the time to come is definitely to understand the differences between linear and circular mindsets in design and production. Mm-hmm. Many brands today are still operating within a linear system, trying to talk about circularity. And so secondhand and care and that, it's not good enough. You also need to understand, like, how is this loop in the future gonna be closed? How do we need to transform in our sourcing, design, and production to make sure this is happening? And we, in the future, the consumer will demand this because the consumer know about all the overconsumption, overproduction, clothing mountains dropped off in different areas of the world, just burnt up, etc. So this is also something that is a must for brands operating in the future to solve this puzzle on how do we transform from the linear to the circular. And then you can do that in many different ways, but definitely solve that is the next way of working that they need to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Frederick, we touched upon so many different aspects. It was fantastic conversation, many different facets. I enjoyed it very much. And yeah, I want to say thank you for this very nice episode that hopefully a lot of listeners will also enjoy. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it a lot. And I can just make like a small closing, I mean, as you said, we touched on so many different angles for it. And I could just have like a closing for a brand perspective to say that being consumer-centric means that you accept that you're not perfect in your transformation in what you're doing. But by taking step by step, you can transform a brand together with the consumer by inviting the consumer and listening to the consumer and finding out what brings value to the consumer. That makes transformation from the inside so much more fun and so much easier to get out of the paralysis paradox. And from the consumer perspective, if there's consumers or people buying stuff listening, 9 out of 10 feel their actions doesn't matter. But they do matter. So when doing choices, it does matter because all the choices you do makes a signal into the CFO that checks last year's sales number, and that nudges the CFO into making better decisions and supporting sustainability departments and product departments into more sustainable innovations in the next year to come. So even if they don't see it now, it's a lot of stuff that goes on and becomes analyzed in the end. So it does matter. So making small choices in consumption has a big power. That would be my closing words.
Yeah, very strong closing words. And you speak right from my heart saying this, because this is also an experience, Frederick, I actually have when working with brands as well from a retail side, that also this phenomenon that works from customers towards retail. So if they support sustainability initiatives and products that are very preferred when it comes to sustainability, this has an impact. And also asking from a retail side to brands for sustainability related things also has an impact. So this is not without impact, not disappearing in a black box, but our decisions, what we do and how we behave makes a difference.
Good. Yeah, it does. It does. So let's make better decisions.
Frederick, thank you so much.
Thank you, Fabian.
This was my conversation with Frederick Ekström, a dedicated future shaper who works to understand how people think and feel in order to address the tension between the discomfort we sense and the overwhelm we experience when trying to do the right thing. My key takeaways: people working within brands face the same emotional challenges as consumers. 78% of consumers feel we are heading toward an ecological crisis. Yet, at the same time, many believe they are already doing all they reasonably can. We will not build a prosperous future simply by analyzing last year's sales figures. The opportunity lies elsewhere. People want to consume responsibly. Brands want to act responsibly. If we start from that shared intention, meaningful change can happen step by step. If you are curious about Frederick's work, or if you work for a brand that wants to better understand what truly moves consumers, feel free to reach out to Above the Clouds. You will find a link to Frederick's website in the show notes. Thank you for listening to New Horizons, the podcast dedicated to giving a voice to the people in outdoor and sustainability who are shaping a positive and possible future. I'm Fabian Nenzer, and I look forward to welcome you back soon on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for listening.